This famous old Edison cylinder from 1889 has been the source of much conjecture among musicians and musicologists. If you listen very closely, you can make out the name Johannes Brahms. For a long time, people thought that the speaker actually was Brahms, identifying himself. Now researchers believe it's someone else's voice, introducing Brahms. But there seems to be no doubt about the man at the piano. That is Brahms, his very own fingers on the keyboard. If only we could hear it a little better, thought one scholar at Stanford, it might tell us so much. So for years, this Stanford fellow has worked to strip it electronically of all the noise and come up with a kind of computer recreation. Volumes are now being written about the secrets these few seconds reveal about performance practice, the 19th century, and Brahms himself. Such things are tantalizing. They're a taste of history we don't often get. A lot of composers recorded their own music, and there are many more revealing examples than that Brahms fragment. Sergei Rachmaninoff, in his day, was known as much for his piano performances as for his compositions. He was a spectacular performer of his own and others' music. Edvard Grieg, the Norwegian composer of Peer Gynt, who died just 100 years ago, made this recording of one of his lyric pieces in 1903. Prokofiev was a terrific pianist. This is his 1932 recording of his own third piano concerto. Years ago, these recordings were hard to find collector's items of another age. Now they're available to all, cleaned up on CD, yours at the click of a mouse. And we love it, naturally, because it simplifies things. It tells us there is a correct way to play Ravel or Rachmaninoff, and we know what it is. Or do we? It was in the middle of the 19th century that music's huge sea change took place. Clara Schumann began giving concerts performing music by Beethoven. Then Franz Liszt walked out onto a concert stage, sat down and performed music by Donizetti and Mozart. Liszt called the event a recital. No recordings of those, unfortunately. Up to that point, music had been something performed by the same person who'd written it, for the most part. But after those early recitals, all bets were off. An interpreter was added to the mix, and it changed everything. When pianists played pieces by Beethoven in public, they tried to remain true to the composer, but they couldn't help adding something of themselves. From that historic moment forward, you could play Beethoven any way you wanted. Almost immediately, it seemed obvious that it could do nothing but help the cause of Beethoven and Brahms, Chopin, Schubert, and so on, to have various artists performing this music in their own ways. How much of yourself do you add, then? There doesn't seem to be any way to quantify it. That, in fact, is the art of it, as we've come to know it. Historic performances by composers are thrilling, but they're not always better or more entertaining. Dmitri Shostakovich recorded his set of preludes and fugues, and they're fascinating to listen to for historical reasons, and probably pianists who want to play that music should study these recordings. But then you take someone like Sviatoslav Richter, the great Soviet pianist who died 10 years ago this month, and listen to his recordings of the same pieces. I'd have to come down on the side of Richter, for sheer technique and excitement, and for showing a side of the pieces that their composer was somehow less equipped to show. Is it scandalous to suggest that the performances of Richter are more listenable than those of the actual composer of the music? Probably, but that can't be helped. So how can performers use the information given them by composers' recordings? Not always easily, as pianist Misha Dichter told me in an interview some years ago. We were talking about Rachmaninoff.
We're given the score, And we have the added, you could say benefit, but also problem of hearing his own performances on record.
This was recorded by Rachmaninoff in 1929.
Now, if I go out and play it like that, I'm being an imitator. I hate myself for that, but I would hate myself for ignoring the legacy he's left us on record. What do? I still don't know.
And then there is the strange case of Maurice Ravel and his rather primitive recording of his own wildly popular Pavane. Because the great composer Ravel wasn't much of a pianist, his recording has served as a kind of rough sketch, but certainly nothing to challenge or intimidate an interpreter who might do something with it more like this. We have Franz Liszt and Clara Schumann to thank for all of this, for the way an interpreter was liberated to interpret. When they got the idea 175 years ago to play other people's music in concert, they showed that you don't have to have written it to play it. Even more, they introduced the seemingly contradictory notion that you can be faithful to a piece of music by injecting into it your own skill and personality. And that's what has extended and enhanced the life of some of these pieces written hundreds of years ago. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkin.